And really, the question I want to ask people today is, have you been praying to Jupiter? Jupiter, for those who don't know, is the main god of the Romans. The Greeks had three main gods, which were called Zeus, Hera, and Athena, which was the father Zeus, the mother Hera, and the daughter Athena, the daughter of the holy union of the mother and the father. And then the Romans called that Jupiter, Juno, and Minerva. Jupiter was the father, Juno was the mother, and Minerva was the goddess who was the daughter of God. What on earth does any of that have to do with Yahweh? Stay tuned and find out.
You are listening to Nehemiah Gordon's Raw Stream of Torah Consciousness. Thank you for supporting Nehemiah's Makor Hebrew Foundation. Learn more at nehemiahswall.com.
Shalom support team, a warm appreciation for all the shofar trumpeters standing with me on the wall. I want to thank you for helping me empower people with information so they can defend the word of Yehovah and build their faith based on ancient Hebrew sources. And that's what we are going to do today. We're going to look at the ancient Hebrew sources for the pronunciation of the name of the creator of the universe. Every scholar at every university and seminary in the world knows that the original pronunciation of God's holy name is Yahweh. So let's look at the ancient Hebrew sources that prove our Heavenly Father's name is Yahweh. Okay, we're done. That's it. There are no Hebrew sources that prove that our Creator's name is Yahweh. We've looked at every single one and they don't exist. There is nothing, not a single shred of evidence. So where did we get Yahweh from? And I recently have been doing some research and I stumbled upon something that's completely shocked me. I was genuinely surprised. And you know, and I've said for years, you know, well, I know the true pronunciation is Yehovah. That's based on the Hebrew manuscripts. But, you know, if you want to pronounce it Yahweh, that's fine. It could be Yahweh. There's not any Hebrew proof of that. So I've been looking at these sources and now I've got to say, we've got a problem, people. But this is my raw stream of Torah consciousness. It's not scripted. So please bear with me here. So where do we get Yahweh from? And really, it starts with this observation made by scholars back in the 1700s. And I don't know exactly how far back it goes, but I've traced this back to 1707, when there's a scholar named Reland in Holland, and he wrote a book about this. He actually wrote a series of documents about this. He collected actually a bunch of treatises about this. And what he says is, look, the vowels of the name Yehovah that we've been using, Reland is a Christian, that the Christians have been using, that's not the true vowels of the God of Israel. Those are actually the vowels of the name Adonai. And I've talked about this before, that if you actually look in the Hebrew manuscripts, the vowels in the Hebrew manuscripts are not the vowels of Adonai. But this is what Reland thought in 1707. And it's been repeated until this very day for the last 300 plus years, this inaccurate statement that the vowels of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in the Hebrew manuscripts are the vowels of Adonai. It's not true. You can read about it in my book, Shattering the Conspiracy of Silence, in my Open Door series. You can watch it on YouTube. Go to NehemiahsWall.com and click over to Open Door series. It's one of the things there. And listen, it's not. It's just factually not the vowels of Adonai. But this is what Reland thought in 1707. And he says, if these aren't the true vowels, the vowels of Yehovah, if those are the vowels of Adonai, and come on, you don't have to be a Hebrew scholar to realize the vowels of Adonai should be Yahovah and not Yehovah. But Reland talks about this. He writes hundreds of pages, and other people write hundreds of pages about this in his book. This is what they thought for 300 years, and they were wrong. But once they threw out the vowels that actually appear in the Hebrew manuscripts, then they started to say, what are the true vowels of the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, of the name of the creator of the universe? And as I said, every scholar in the world knows it's Yahweh. But the Anchor Bible Dictionary, which really is a pretty authoritative source, it's really what it is it's a culmination, it's a summary of all of the academic, and that's important, of all the academic scholarly knowledge taught in universities and seminaries and Christian seminaries up until the point when the Anchor Bible Dictionary was written about, I don't know, 20 years ago, in the 90s, I think it was. And in the Anchor Bible Dictionary, it tells us Yahweh is, quote, a scholarly guess. That's a pretty serious statement. It's only a scholarly guess, but I thought everybody knows it's Yahweh. So where does this scholarly guess come from? That was the question I was looking at. And I knew, but I wanted to go back and look at the sources and refresh my memory. And when I actually looked at the sources and stumbled upon some new things, I really was genuinely shocked. It really was not expected for me to uncover what I uncovered, and I got to share this. So the champion of Yahweh is Gesenius, or Gesenius, G-E-S-E-N-I-U-S. He was a German. In the 1800s, he revolutionized Hebrew grammar. These scholars back then in Europe, they were trained in Latin and Greek, and they had systematically figured out what the rules of Latin and Greek were, which is not a simple thing. Those are very complicated languages. And then they took that academic scholarly brilliance, really brilliance, and they applied it to Hebrew. And they figured out things that, to be honest, the Hebrew grammarians had figured out most of those things, but they even figured out some more things that the Hebrew grammarians hadn't figured out. And he wrote the systematic grammar of biblical Hebrew to this very day. As we say in Hebrew, ad hayom hazeh, until this very day. If you want to know something in biblical Hebrew grammar, you look at Gesenius. He's the source. He is the definitive grammar of biblical Hebrew. It's been translated into English. It's been translated into many languages. He also wrote a lexicon, Gesenius's lexicon. And Gesenius's lexicon is also used to this day, although it's been revised many, many, many times. The primary dictionary of biblical Hebrew. You know, I'll talk to people who say, well, I looked it up in the dictionary, in the lexicon, in Strong's Concordance. No, Strong's Concordance is not based on scholarship. It's based on someone's theology and someone who didn't even know Hebrew really well. The two primary dictionaries, and lexicon is just a fancy word for a dictionary. The two primary dictionaries of biblical Hebrew are called Brown Driver Briggs, or BDB, and Halot. Halot stands for the Hebrew and Aramaic Lexicon of the Old Testament. And those are the two best. And BDB in some ways is better, but Halot's more up to date. Both of those are based on Gesenius's lexicon. So when I'm talking about Gesenius's lexicon, this isn't some obscure book in a library somewhere. This is the basis of modern day scholarship of biblical Hebrew, and rightfully so. I agree with 99% of what Gesenius says. And specifically, I agree with what he says when he brings his sources and those sources check out. And he does. He usually brings the sources. Sometimes he brings the sources and you're left wondering, did he really say that? Is that really the source of what thousands of scholars around the world are saying? Really? So let's look at what Gesenius says, because he's the one who champions the name Yahweh. And he tells us he gets it from Reland, the one I mentioned from 1707. Gesenius writes this in his Lexicon of 1833, which incidentally was written in Latin. Not surprising. Again, scholars back then in Europe, when they studied in America as well, if there were scholars, they studied first Latin and Greek, and then they would go study some other language like Hebrew. And they would study it according to the pattern that they had understood Latin. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Languages have certain universal characteristics, and they were trying to find those characteristics. And they'd say, okay, you know, Latin has this, Hebrew doesn't have that, but it has this other thing instead. It has verbs, and it has nouns, and it has adjectives. Every language has that. So Gesenius wrote this lexicon in 1833. The original one was written in 1810, so this is a second or third edition. It went through many, many revisions. And it was translated in 1846 by a guy named Tregellis or Tregellis. He calls it Gesenius's Hebrew and Chaldee Lexicon. And a beautiful thing is you can actually go online on Google Books and find the original 1833 edition of the Lexicon Manuale Hebraica Met Chaldeicum. That's the Latin name. And the original 1846 translation by Tregellis online. It's amazing. If you actually just Google Gesenius and lexicon, the Tregellis translation comes up. He translated it into English from Latin. And so, as I said, Gesenius championed Yahweh, and he brings a number of sources, and other scholars, not just Gesenius, bring a number of sources from Greek texts. And they'll say, for example, Clement of the Church Father, he has it as Yahweh. Now, Yahweh is not Yahweh, but they say it's close enough, and that's probably what it would have been in Hebrew, Yahweh. And to be honest, those are secondary sources. And what do I mean by secondary sources? They're secondary proofs. They're primary sources, but they're secondary proofs. And what do I mean by that? So, for example, there's a really interesting document called the Hebraicos Logos. It's actually part of something called the Great Leiden Magical Papyrus. And the Hebraicos Logos is a Greek magical text. Now, you're asking me, why, Nehemiah, are you bringing us Greek magical text? That's pagan. We want nothing to do with that. And guess what? This is the source, one of the sources that scholars bring for Yahweh. But then if you look in the Hebraicos Logos, it's a magical incantation, and it uses the name of God, the God of Israel, to perform its magic. And you might think, how is that possible? They were Greeks writing in Egypt, and now it's in Leiden in Holland. And you're telling me this Hebraicos Logos, which is really interesting because we can date it very precisely. It was written sometime between around 30 and 70 AD, this Hebrew incantation. And in a minute, you'll understand why I'm bringing it. But it's really interesting because it's about casting out demons and healing, and it's completely pagan. But this is one of the sources that scholars bring for the name Yahweh. And remember, I said that there's no Hebrew sources. This is a Greek source. You might wonder, well, it's Greek. Why is it written in Egypt? Because in Egypt of this period, between 30 and 70 AD, the primary language was Greek. Alexandria specifically was a major center of Greek culture, and in Alexandria, they spoke Greek. This is actually a really interesting document in and of itself. Here's an example of where we can learn what not to do from this pagan magic. Anyway, this magical incantation, let me read you the end so you understand why I'm bringing you this. It's this conjure, this magic. It's disgusting to me. So they're conjuring these demons. It says, I conjure you by the great god Sevaot. That's what we know in Hebrew, Sevaot, of hosts. Through whom the Jordan River drew back and the Red Sea, which Israel crossed, became impassable. Imagine, this is a Greek in Egypt who's writing this as a magical incantation for some Greek Egyptian who's sick. And he's conjuring the demons who's infected this person by the god Sabaoth, because they knew the god of Israel had power and they knew his name had power. And so they decided to hijack it. He says, because I conjure you by the one who introduced the 140 languages and distributed them by his own command. Now, bear in mind, this is one magical incantation in a book with many, many incantations. And most of them are to pagan gods. They're to, you know, Horus and Isis and all kinds of pagan gods and Zeus, etc. I'm going to skip ahead. He says, I conjure you by the one in holy Jerusalem before whom the unquenchable fire burns for all time with his holy name. So this is at a time when the temple still stood, before 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. And then he ends this. This is a long thing. I'm not bringing the whole thing. He says, I adjure you, meaning I make you swear, you demon. He says, I adjure you, the one who receives this conjuration, not to eat pork. And every spirit and demon, whatever sort it may be, will be subject to you. In other words, these pagans believe not eating pork, this Jewish belief, was to keep the demons from infecting you. Idiots. And while conjuring, blow once, blowing air from the tips of the feet up to the face. I don't know how you do that. And it will be assigned. And it says, keep yourself pure, for this charm is Hebraic and is preserved among pure men. And that's why it's called the Hebraikos Logos, because in Greek, that phrase, this charm is Hebraic, is these are literally Hebraikos Logos, Hebrew words. So why on earth am I bringing you this? Because here in the Hebraikos Logos, you have 5 different pronunciation of God's holy name, which is being invoked by these pagans. And here's the interesting thing. They obviously heard this from Jews, or possibly Jewish Christians or Hebrew Christians, Jewish followers of Yeshua. And the reason I say that is Yeshua is mentioned by name in this incantation. So they saw people healing and they heard the name of God being invoked, of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, but in their Greek ear, they wrote it one time as Yo-Eh, another time as Ya-E-O, a third time as Ya-O, a fourth time as Ya-Ba, and the fifth time as Ya-Eh. Now, Ya-Eh really could be Yahweh, Yahweh, it really could be. Even Yo-Eh could be Yahweh. Ya-Ba would probably be something in Hebrew like Yahweh, or Yahweh, obviously, a Yahweh. But this is pagan. This can't be the source. And even in Gesenius's credit, he doesn't say this is the primary source. The primary source that Gesenius brings in his grammar for Yahweh is the Samaritans. The Samaritans, we'll talk in a minute about who the Samaritans were. Today, the Samaritans are a group of people who follow the Torah, although they have a slightly different Torah than the Torah of the Jews. In their Torah, it tells them that they're not supposed to worship in the place where Yehovah will choose his name, but rather in Mount Gerizim. Mount Gerizim is a mountain outside of Shechem. In fact, Shechem or Shechem or Nablus today is an ancient city. It's where Joseph was buried and a bunch of things happened biblically in Shechem. It's where Dinah was kidnapped by the prince of Shechem and there was the war there. We all know that story. It's in Genesis. And today Shechem is ruled by something called the Palestinian Authority. And I'm recording this in 2015 and hopefully in years to come when people listen to this, they'll go to their parents and they'll say, Daddy, what was the Pakistani Authority? Because it won't exist, but it exists today. Anyway, it's Palestinian occupied territory. However, Mount Gerizim, which is literally a 5-minute walk outside of Shechem, is actually Israeli territory today. And that's because the Samaritans who keep the Torah or a form of the Torah, they fled mostly from Shechem and they now live on Mount Gerizim. But for thousands of years, they lived in Shechem. And to this day, they sacrifice there. They bring the Passover sacrifice every year. They don't bring all the sacrifices, just the Passover sacrifice every year they bring on Mount Gerizim. And Rayland in 1707, he talked about how the Samaritans preserved the true pronunciation of Yahweh, of the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. And this is, I'm quoting now from Gesenius. He says, others, as Rayland, that's the guy from 1707, following the Samaritans, supposed that Yahweh was anciently the true pronunciation. Now, how do we know how the Samaritans pronounce the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh? Go to a Samaritan today and he'll say, oh no, we don't say the name. We say Shema. Shema is the Aramaic of Hashem, of the name. Shema means the name. They actually call God the name, just like Jews do, except instead of saying Hashem in Hebrew, they say Shema in Aramaic. Wow. So how do we know how the Samaritans pronounce the name? So in the 5th century, there was what's known as a church father in the Christian church. He was a Greek named Theodoretus Cyrus. He lived approximately from the year 393 to 457 AD. And he wrote a book called Questions on Exodus. And on Exodus chapter 7, question number 15, he says as follows. He's speaking about the name written on the mitre of the high priest. That's this strip of metal that the high priest used to wear. And it had Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. It said Kodesh La Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, holy to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. So Theodoret says about that name, he says the Samaritans call it Yahweh. In Greek, that's Yoda, Alpha, Beta, Epsilon, Yahweh, while the Jews call it Ayah. That's interesting. He actually says the Jews do refer to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh and they call it Ayah. Ayah is almost certainly Yah, which is the poetic form of the Father's name that we see in Hallelujah, which means praise Yah. So the Jews no longer actually speak the name. They just refer to it as Yah, but the Samaritans call it Yahweh. And years ago, I wrote a paper on the name and I suggested that how do we know that Yahweh is even Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh? Because we know the Samaritans don't pronounce the name and may not have even pronounced it in the 4th century. We don't know if they did or not. Or that's what I wrote anyway. And I suggested that perhaps this is a title for Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh rather than his name. And a friend of mine pointed out that there's a book about the Samaritans and it says they refer to God as Yahpeh, which is their corrupt Hebrew pronunciation of Yahpeh, the beautiful one. And so Yahweh might actually be the beautiful one. And that's what I thought for years. I've thought that for the last 15, 20 years until recently when I came across what I'm fairly convinced is the true source of Yahweh. Now look, Theodoret didn't know anything. Theodoret was a Greek and he's quoting the Samaritans and the Samaritans themselves are not Israelites. They're Gentiles. And let's talk about who the Samaritans were. They were forcibly settled in Israel by the Assyrians. And again, like I said, they're based on Shechem. Shechem is this city in a valley. And on one side of the valley is Mount Gerizim, or what the Samaritans identify as Mount Gerizim. That's a different discussion. And the other side is Mount Ebal. And that's, of course, the mountains where they did the blessing and the curse. That's a different discussion. Anyway, who are these Samaritans? So in Ezra chapter 4, verses 1 to 2, they're mentioned. And they're referred to as the adversaries, the enemies of Judah and Benjamin. This is after the Jews came back from Israel and they started to rebuild the temple. It says, when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the returned exiles were building a temple to Yehovah, or Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, God of Israel, they, the Samaritans, approached Zerubbabel and the chiefs of the clans and said to them, let us build with you, since we too worship your God, having offered sacrifices to him since the time of Esarhaddon of Assyria, who brought us here. Now that's interesting that it mentions Esarhaddon, because the actual settlement of the Samaritans in Israel is described in 2 Kings 17, and there's a different king of Assyria. So in 2 Kings 17, we hear about how the king of Assyria came and he conquered Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel, the 10 tribes. He exiled the 10 tribes, and then he wanted to put other people in the place of the 10 tribes. And this was actually a very common practice back then. The thought was, if you're a foreigner in a foreign land, you'll be more likely to be loyal to the central government than if you are in your native land, where the next village over, those are your cousins, and they'll rise up in rebellion with you. So what they did is they took the Israelites and put them in some foreign land, and they took foreigners and they settled them in Israel. So 2 Kings 17:24, it says, the king of Assyria brought people from Babylon, Cutha, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim, and he settled them in the towns of Samaria in place of the Israelites. They took possession of Samaria and dwelt in its towns. And of course, the capital of Samaria back then was Shechem, and is to this day, in fact. When they first settled there, they did not worship Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. So Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh sent lions against them, which killed some of them. They said to the king of Assyria, the nations which you deported and resettled in the towns of Samaria do not know the rules of the God of the land. Therefore, he has let lions loose against them, which are killing them, for they do not know the rules of the God of the land. In other words, you have these foreigners from Babylon and Cutha and other places around there. Today, that's Iraq and Iran. These Babylonians came in, forcibly settled in Israel, and each village was maybe a different place, some from Babylon, some from Cutha, and they're being attacked by lions. And they say, we know why we're being attacked by lions. There's some local deity here who we don't understand, and we're worshiping the God of Babylon. We got to worship the local God or the lions will kill us. So in 2 Kings 17:27, and this is the founding of the Samaritans, the king of Assyria gave an order, send there one of the priests whom you have deported, let him go and dwell there. In other words, we're going to take an Israelite priest, one of the Israelite priests who got the Israelites exiled in the first place from the 10 kingdoms, and we're going to have him teach the Samaritans, these foreigners, how to worship the God of Israel, the local God of the land. So one of the priests who they had exiled from Samaria came and settled in Bethel. He taught them how to worship Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Uh-oh, he's the wrong guy to be teaching them. It goes on in verse 29. However, each nation continued to make its own gods and to set them up in the high places, the bamot, which had been made by the people of Samaria. Each nation set them up in the towns in which it lived. In other words, they say we got to do what the ancient inhabitants of the land worship the God the way they worshiped, and that's what they did. But this was the false worship that got the Israelites kicked out of the land in the first place. 2 Kings 17:30, the Babylonians made Sukkot-Benot, that's the name of some deity, and the men of Kuth made Nergal. I don't know what Nergal is, it's some god of Kuth. And the men of Hamat made Ashimah. That's really interesting and maybe worthy of a study in itself. Remember the Samaritans to this day, you say to them, how do you pronounce Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh? They'll say Shema, which sounds a lot like Ashima. And in Hebrew, it's written almost identically. Interesting. And they'll tell you that means the name, but it's actually a name of a specific deity from Hamat. Hamat is a city in Syria. And the Avites made Nifchaz and Tartak and the Sepharvites burned their children as offerings to Adramelech and Anamelech, the gods of Sepharvaim. They worshipped Jehovah, but they also appointed from their own ranks priests of the shrines of the high places who officiated for them in the high places. They worshipped Jehovah while serving their own gods, according to the practices of the nations from which they had been deported. To this day, they follow their former practices. They do not worship Jehovah properly. They do not follow the laws and practices, the teachings and instructions that Jehovah enjoined upon the descendants of Jacob, who was given the name Israel, with whom he made a covenant, with whom he commanded, you shall worship no other gods. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. Now, this is really interesting because here we have them coming from a bunch of different cities in a specific period. And then in Ezra 4, they come from a different place. And we're about to see a source where they'll talk about some of them came from Sidon, which is in Lebanon. And what apparently happened is there were these waves of immigration, of probably forced immigration by the Assyrian kings from these foreigners. And the interesting thing is what's described in 2 Kings 17, that they have this, what we call syncretism. They have two gods. They worship the god of Hamath, and they also worship the god of Israel. As time went on, that ceased to be the case. What they did, and which probably tends to happen in many cultures, is you have these two different gods with two different names, and they end up being combined. And by the time they come to Zerubbabel in chapter 4 of the book of Ezra, they say, look, we worship the God of Israel. We worship the same God you worship. They don't mention Nergal or whatever these other gods were called, or Anamelech or Adramelech or Ashima. And maybe those gods were still worshipped, but they were combined with the God of Israel. Now, here's one of the sources that I stumbled upon. Everything I'm telling you up to now, look, I knew that. This was something I stumbled upon that to me was, this is the smoking gun of where Yahweh really comes from. Gesenius, remember, tells us it comes from the Samaritans. We know the Samaritans are foreigners who have been forcibly settled in Israel. And they hesitantly worship the God of Israel because they're afraid of being attacked by lions. There's this plague of animals. And now they're worshiping a corrupt form of the Torah, following a corrupt form of the Torah, worshiping the God of Israel in a corrupt form. Well, let's fast forward a few hundred years. And we come to 168 BCE, where we have, you know, what became Hanukkah. It was the Maccabee uprising against the Seleucid Greeks. The Greek ruler in Syria, the Seleucids were the Greeks in Syria. And their leader is a man called Antiochus, or Antiochus in Hebrew, Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. And it's interesting, the name Epiphanes means the one who reveals himself. Antiochus, this Greek ruler, claimed to be God. And the Maccabees rose up against the Greeks, and it resulted in a great deal of suffering and persecution for the Jews. This is what led to the Maccabee Wars, the Hasmonean Wars, which became Hanukkah. That's a different discussion. But Josephus preserves a letter that the Samaritans of Shechem, remember that to this day, that's the capital of the Samaritans in Shechem. The Samaritans sent a letter to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. And the main gist of the letter is, look, you might think we're Jews because we keep Shabbat, but we ain't Jews. We're foreigners in this land. Don't persecute us for what the Jews are doing. Let me read you the letter. This is in Antiquities, Book 12, 5.5, or in other countings, it's section 258. So this is the letter the Samaritans sent to Antiochus. It's absolutely fascinating. This is the smoking gun of where Yahweh comes from. So they sent ambassadors to Antiochus, to Antiochus, and an epistle whose contents are these, quote, to King Antiochus the God, Epiphanes, immemorial from the Sidonians who live at Shechem. Our forefathers, upon certain frequent plagues, remember 2 Kings 17, it was lions, upon certain frequent plagues, and as following a certain ancient superstition, had a custom of observing that day which by the Jews is called the Sabbath. In other words, you might think we're Jews because we keep Shabbat, but that's because we didn't want the lions to hurt us. And when they had erected a temple at the mountain called Gerizim, though without a name, they offered upon it the proper sacrifices. What? Without a name. The God of Mount Gerizim has no name. Hold that thought. Now, upon just treatment of these wicked Jews, those that manage their affairs, supposing that we were of kin to them, and practice as they do, make us liable to the same accusations. Although we are originally Sidonians, as is evident from the public records. In other words, your officials, King Antiochus, are attacking us, because they think we're Jews, but we're not Jews. We're foreigners. You could look in the public records. It's a matter of public record that we're not Israelites. We're Sidonians. We're foreigners. Yeah, we keep Shabbat, but that's because it's the local God that we're trying to appease. Section 261, we therefore beseech thee, our benefactor and savior, referring to Antiochus, to give order to Apollonius, the governor of this part of the country, and to Nicanor, the procurator of thy affairs, to give us no disturbance, nor to lay to our charge what the Jews are accused for. Don't blame us for what the Jews are doing. Quote, since we are aliens from their nation and from their customs. And then this is the, oh, wow. And the Samaritans go on, they say, but let our temple, which at present has no name at all, be named the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. We've got to stop there. Let me finish the reading. If this were once done, we should no longer be disturbed, but should be more intent on our own occupation with quietness, and so bring in a greater revenue to you. In other words, we won't rebel because we'll worship the same God as you worship. And I love it in the Greek. In the Greek, it's speaking about this temple. Remember, Josephus is writing in Greek, but he's quoting the letter to Antiochus, which probably was written in Greek as well by the Samaritans. And they refer to their temple as, in Greek, anonymon, which is where we get the word anonymous. It's an anonymous temple. It has no name. So let's just call it the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. Hellenius means Greek. Jupiter the Greek. It goes on, when the Samaritans had petitioned for this, the king sent them back the following answer in an epistle. King Antiochus to Nicanor, the Sidonians who live at Shechem have sent me the memorial enclosed. When therefore we were advising with our friends about it, friends in this culture doesn't mean friends, it means their advisors, the messenger sent by them represented to us that they are no way concerned with accusations belonging to the Jews. In other words, don't blame them for what the Jews do, they're Gentiles. But choose to live after the custom of the Greeks. Accordingly, we declare them free from such accusations in order that, agreeable to their petition, their temple be named the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. So, let's stop here for a second. The Temple of the Samaritans on Mount Gerizim in 168 approximately BCE was a temple to a god who had no name, whose name wasn't used or wasn't spoken. And so they were able to call him the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius to keep the Greeks from hurting them. Samaritans, they've got a Torah, and their Torah, it says Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, but they don't pronounce that name. And there's a very interesting passage in the Mishnah, which is the writings of early rabbis. And it's interesting because it's a statement that we know, probably by the time it was written, was no longer respected and observed. It was the statement that an Israelite is required to greet his fellow using the name. That's in the Mishnah I quoted in my book, Shattering the Conspiracy of Silence. What I didn't know, and this is one of the things I learned recently, is that scholars came along and looked at this and they said, oh, wait a minute, this is really strange. Why would the rabbis make takanot a requirement to greet your fellow using the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh? The Torah doesn't command us to greet our fellow in the name of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. And the Mishnah itself quotes two examples of Jews who did this, of Israelites who did this. One was Boaz walking on the road from Bethlehem, and he says to the harvesters, Yehovah Imachem, and they say to him, Yevarechecha Yehovah. And the second example is the angel who greets Gideon in Judges 6. He says, Yehovah Imcha, Yehovah be with you. And the rabbis quote these two sources, and they say, therefore, an Israelite is required to greet his fellow using the name. It's interesting. An Israelite is required to greet his fellow Israelite. It's so interesting. It says that in the Mishnah. And again, the Mishnah was written down, for those who don't know, in the year 210 AD. By the year 210 AD, no one disputes that the name Yehovah was no longer spoken by Jews. It had been banned by the rabbis, probably around the year 150, maybe a little earlier. The Jews no longer, certainly the rabbis no longer spoke the name, but they remember a time when the rabbis decreed, not only is it permissible to speak the name, but we established takanot, one of our rules and regulations, that you're required to greet your fellow Israelite using the name. And so the scholars talk about it, and they say, why would the rabbis make this decree? And they scour the sources, and they come up with something I didn't realize, that the reason that the rabbis, according to these scholars, required people to speak the name when they greeted their fellow Israelite is because the Samaritans forbade people to speak the name. So if you were walking on the road in Israel from Jerusalem to Jericho and you came across a man and he looked like an Israelite, he maybe spoke a dialect of Hebrew like an Israelite, maybe Aramaic, and you greeted him and you said to him, Yevarechecha Yehovah, Yehovah bless you. And he responded to you, Ashima Imcha. Shema, the name be with you, which could also be Ashima, the God of mentioned there in 2 Kings 17. Then you knew you weren't dealing with an Israelite, you were dealing with a Samaritan. So according to Gretz, who was a scholar in the 1800s, a Jewish scholar, he argues, and we can't prove this for sure, but he argues, and it's really fascinating, the reason the rabbis made takanot, requiring people, because Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, allows you to greet your fellow in the name, the reason they required it was so that you would be able to distinguish an Israelite from a Samaritan, because the Samaritans in that period, in this early period, they don't use the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. They have the God who has no name, the anonymous God, the temple of the anonymous. Wow. It explains so much. And look, Gretz is speculating. We don't know why the rabbis made this takanot. They make all kinds of takanot, but this makes a lot of sense. And he proves in his sources that the Samaritans, this is one source, this is other sources, some of the Samaritans at least did not speak the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. So this is really interesting. So we've got two different pieces of information here. On the one hand, the Samaritans don't say Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and the rabbis are opposed to that. So they require people, before the ban of the name, they actually require people to speak the name when they greet their fellows, so you can distinguish Israelites from Samaritans. On the other hand, they rename the temple Mount Gerizim to the god Jupiter, Hellenius, Jupiter of the Greeks. That's interesting. This is interesting on so many levels, I don't even know where to begin. When I read this, the first thing I thought of was a display they had at the Israel Museum a number of years back, quite a number of years back. It was a coin, and it was a coin minted in Shechem, in Shechem, and it showed actually the temple to Jupiter that was on the top of Mount Gerizim. And it's one of the fascinating things. Here you read this description of a temple that existed in a book from 2,000 years ago, and then archaeologists can go and dig up that temple. That's not a common thing. That's pretty impressive. So they actually dug up the temple of Jupiter on the top of Mount Gerizim. And one of the characteristics that there are these hundreds and hundreds, over 1,000 steps leading from Shechem, which is in the valley, up to the temple of Jupiter at the top of Mount Gerizim. And they found the steps. These were special steps that they'd walk up. And we have this passage in Psalms, the Shir HaMa'alot, Psalm 129. It's the songs of ascent. And literally in Hebrew, it's the song of the steps or the ramp. It's the songs they would speak as they were going up, literally walking up the steps to the temple. And they also had steps at the temple of Jupiter in Mount Gerizim. And those steps have been found and the temple was found. And interestingly, you can look this up. The city of Nablus, which is the modern Arab name for Shechem, on this municipal website, it talks about the sun disk that was discovered in the temple of Jupiter. That's a whole discussion. It's interesting. There is some sun worship going on there. So what on earth does the temple of Jupiter in Shechem and Nablus of the Samaritans have anything to do with what Theodoret of Cyrus says in the 5th century? Well, now we've got a problem. In the 5th century, Theodoret comes along and he tells us the Samaritans call that word that was written on the mitre of the high priest, they call it Yahweh, which pretty much everyone agrees in Hebrew would be Yahweh or Yahweh. But basically, Theodoret in the 5th century, this church father is telling us the Samaritans refer to their God as Yahweh. But we know the Samaritans don't speak the name. They have the Anonymous, the anonymous temple. So what's going on here? Well, there was a name the Samaritans spoke, and that was the name Jupiter. Like I said, the archaeologists discovered this temple of Jupiter on Mount Gerizim. It actually was destroyed by the Maccabees, and then it was rebuilt by Hadrian. And to this day, you can go and see the ruins excavated by archaeologists of the Temple of Jupiter. And Jupiter was a name that Samaritans did speak. Now, what is Jupiter? This is another thing. I had to look this up. I'm not a Latin expert. Now, it's the first thing I'll say it right up front. So I actually spoke to three professors of Latin language at Tufts University, Duke University, and University of Texas in Austin. And they all told me the same thing, that Jupiter, in Latin, there is no J in Latin. It's really Jupiter. And Jupiter is a compound word of two different words. And the base form of the name, and actually Jupiter has in it the word pater. Pater is just Latin for father. And so Jupiter actually is Yahweh Pater, Father Yahweh. Now, I want to make this very clear. This is one of the reasons I spoke to these professors. I needed to hear with my own ear. How do you pronounce this word? Now, in English, we have this word. You know, you'll hear like Sherlock Holmes say, by Jove, I think I've got it. Well, what is Jove? Jove is simply... there's no J, remember, in Latin. Jove is actually the Latin word Yahweh. And this is what I was told by these three professors at these three very respectable American universities, and specifically in classical studies, Tufts is one of the top universities. They said it's either pronounced in ancient Latin, it would have been pronounced either as Yahweh or Yahweh. Interesting. Yahweh or Yahweh. And I can't help but notice the similarity between Yahweh and Yahweh. And remember, so Jupiter in Latin is just simply Yahweh Pater, Father Yahweh. And we know the Samaritans worshipped Yahweh Pater, Father Yahweh. So is it possible that when Theodoret heard the Samaritans referring to their God as Yahweh Pater, Father Yahweh, that he said, oh, they call their God. We know they worship. We read it in the book of Kings, 2 Kings 17. We read that they worship the God of Israel and they refer to their God as Yahweh. And he wrote down in his book Yahweh in Greek. Could that be what happened? I'll be honest with you. At first, I was very skeptical. I thought, that's far-fetched. I need more evidence. You know, just the two words sound the same. That doesn't mean anything. And people come up with all kinds of wacky things based on one word in one language and another word in another language that really have no connection. And I'll just give you an example. The word in Hebrew, amen, which is from the word emet, truth. There'll be people who say, oh, no, when you say amen to your prayers, you're actually proclaiming the name of the Egyptian god Amon. No, you're not. It's the fact that they have a word in the ancient Egyptian, which sounds a little bit similar to amen, maybe even a lot similar, has nothing to do with the Hebrew word amen, which has a meaning in Hebrew. So I want to be really careful here and say the fact that Yahweh, which is really the base name of Jupiter, Father, Yahweh Peter, Father Yahweh, that it sounds like Yahweh, that in and of itself proves absolutely nothing. The fact that it comes from the Samaritans, according to Theodoret, that's his stated source. And we know the Samaritans don't speak the name, and we know they proclaim the name Yahweh. Okay, now you got my attention. Now we got to go back to Gesenius, who in 1833 wrote his lexicon. And this to me is, there's no question. it's definitive. Here's what Gesenius writes. So first of all, remember before I quoted before, he said, according to Relland and others, it's Yahweh based on the Samaritans. And then he says, to give my own opinion, meaning now Gesenius is giving his opinion. To give my own opinion, I suppose this word, which is Yahweh, to be one of the most remote antiquity, perhaps of the same origin as Yahweh's Jupiter, and transferred from the Egyptians to the Hebrews.
Whoa!
So Gesenius is saying, yeah, I mean, we know it's Yahweh. That makes a lot of sense what the Samaritans say, because it sounds like the Latin name of Jupiter. And Jupiter is an ancient god, and the Hebrews had an ancient god, which, according to Gesenius, they learned from the Egyptians. He goes on, he says, compare what has been said above as to the use of this name on the Egyptian gems. And he's referring to these magical texts. Remember I mentioned the Hebraicos Logos? He had something like that, that also had some form of Yahweh in these Egyptian magical texts. And he says, look, you know, I don't have to speculate it comes from Egypt. I've got it in Egyptian sources. And then so inflected by the Hebrews, he writes, that it might appear both in form and origin to be Phoenicio-Semitic. And he gives the example of Moshe. What is he saying here, Gesenius? What Gesenius is saying is, he's saying something pretty radical. He's saying that Yahweh makes sense because it sounds like the Latin form of Jupiter, which is Yahweh or Yahweh. And according to Gesenius, it has a common origin with Jupiter. In other words, according to Gesenius, the great champion of Yahweh, he really is an authority that's convinced the scholarly consensus to accept Yahweh. According to Gesenius, Yahweh is Jupiter. They both come from some ancient pagan deity. And this is actually an idea that they had back then in Germany in the 1800s. And some scholars still believe this is something called diffusionism, that whenever you have something similar in two different cultures, they must have a common ancient origin. And sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. But basically, the idea of Gesenius was that there was some ancient tribe, maybe in Egypt, who worshipped a god named Yahweh. And that god was later transferred to Italy, to the Latins, to the Romans, and to the Hebrews who were slaves in Egypt. And that's why the Hebrews called him Yahweh. Now, why is Yahweh slightly different than Yahweh? Because they had to adapt it to the Hebrew words. And he gives the example of the name Moses, which in Hebrew is Moshe. And Moshe is an Egyptian word with a different meaning and a slightly different pronunciation. Now, I'm not going to go into that. But for example, where you have Ramses, Ramses is actually Ra Moshe. Ra is the sun god of Egypt, the disk of the sun. And Ra Moshe is the Moshe of Ra. And you have Ahmose, or Ahmose in English, which is Ahmose. Ah was another god. And you have Tutmoshe, Tutmoses. So the name Moshe is a Hebrew name, but it has an Egyptian origin. And that's actually admitted in the Torah. I mean, we're told that she was an Egyptian who gave him the name. And it had one meaning in Hebrew and another meaning in Egyptian. And so he's saying Yahweh is originally an Egyptian deity that went both to Israel and to Rome. And it is the same god, according to Gesenius, the great scholar who champions Yahweh. So this is huge. This is absolutely huge. It's not me speculating that Yahweh is Jupiter. It's the scholar who came up with it, who defended it, who argues this, who's really the most prominent defender of Yahweh, who tells us that it comes from Jupiter. And the fact that he ties it to the Samaritans, he doesn't say, oh, the Samaritans worship Jupiter. But we know the Samaritans didn't speak the name. They had the anonymous temple. So if Theodoret heard a Samaritan saying Yahweh, that was Jupiter. Who else could it have been? I could stop right here. This may be the most important discovery maybe it's not the most, it certainly is like my favorite verse in the Bible, right? This is definitely in my top five most important discoveries. Arguably, this is my second most important discovery. And it's right there in Gesenius and Josephus. It's not like I, you know, uncovered some ancient text that nobody knew about. I'm just putting two and two together and it equals four. Wow. All right. So now I want to go back to a statement that Gesenius made. This is my raw stream of Torah consciousness. I'm getting emotional because what this means is that there's millions, thousands of people at least who are, they're praying to Jupiter. When they say Yahweh, that is Yahweh, Yahweh, Jupiter. Father Yahweh is Father Yahweh, is Jupiter, Jupiter, Yahweh's Pater. What's happened to us? We've got people who are calling on this false thing. Maybe the rabbis were right for banning the name. And think about this. You know, I mentioned how the Samaritans had these different waves and they had different people from different places who each had their own God. And isn't it just the most ecumenical thing to do is, well, yeah, you worship Ashaman, I worship Negal, and he worships Anamel. Let's just all call them God. We'll call him Anonymous, the anonymous God. And then we don't have to fight him. You know, we don't have to fight over the name because he's anonymous. But once he becomes anonymous, then you can stick something else in there. Then you can say, yeah, he's Jupiter of the Greeks. He's Yahweh. He's Yahweh. So he must not be anonymous. This is what he said to us. This is my name forever. This is my mention for generation to generation. If he's anonymous, then we can call him by some false name. He has a name, and his name is Yehovah. All right, I want to go back to Yahweh, and it's something that Gesenius said in my quote here. He says, compare what has been said above, blah, blah, blah. He says, and then so inflected by the Hebrews that it might appear both in form and origin to be the Phoenicio-Shemitic. In other words, he's saying the word Yahweh looks like a Hebrew word, even though it has Egyptian origins, as proved by this Egyptian magical text and this, the Latin sources, and according to Gesenius, which is utter blasphemy and heresy to say that the Israelites are worshiping a pagan Egyptian god. In fact, it defies what it says in the Bible, where Pharaoh said, "I don't know the name of that god. I never heard of your God, Jehovah." He'd heard of Yahweh, maybe, I don't know. But I want to look at what Yahweh means in Hebrew, because he is saying, look, Yahweh has a Hebrew meaning. So Halot, as I mentioned before, is one of the two best dictionaries of biblical Hebrew. There's Brown Driver Briggs, BDB, and there's Halot, Hebrew and Aramaic Lexicon of the Old Testament. And arguably Halot is better because it's more up to date. But Halot talks about the name Yahweh and what it means. And he says it's etymology controversial, meaning we don't really know what the source of the word is. And he gives five different explanations of Yahweh. He says it could mean he that destroys. We got to stop here. What? Yahweh might mean the destroyer? According to the scholarly source, yeah. And really, it's an authoritative scholarly source. That's possibly number one. And number two is he that calls into existence. And that's actually the scholarly consensus, that it means he that causes to be. And I'll talk about that in a minute. He who acts passionately is explanation number three. Number four is he who speaks. Number five is he who calls us ecstatically. This is complete and utter confusion. And why is it confusion? Because Yahweh actually isn't a Hebrew word. It's a made-up Hebrew word. And this is a little complicated what I'm going to explain here. So to fully understand the name Yahweh and how it differs from Yehovah, we've got to look at two grammatical concepts. Bear with me. The first one you'll hear, I'll repeatedly talk about this. Hebrew is a language based on verbs, based on action. And there are what we call seven conjugations, or in Hebrew, binyanim. And each conjugation gives a slightly different meaning to the Hebrew word. And the second grammatical concept, the seven conjugations, the second one is there are four prefixes for Hebrew verbs, and specifically in the imperfect or future, there are four prefixes. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let's talk about the seven conjugations. What do I mean? I'm going to take the word shamar. Every word in biblical Hebrew is based on a three-letter root. The word shamar means to guard, shin mem resh. If I want to say he will guard, it's yishmor, that's the kal conjugation. Nifal is yishamar, means he will be guarded. Well, all I did was I changed the vowels. Yishmor and yishamar is the same exact consonants. Then I can make it yishamer. He will guard intensely, or he'll cling on to something. That's pl, the third conjugation. Fourth conjugation is pual, yishumar. He will be guarded intensely, or he will be clung unto. It's not a real word, but that's what it would mean. Or it may be a real word. It doesn't appear in the Tanakh. That's what it would mean. He feel is yashmir. He will cause to be guarded. Yashomar or yushmar is hufal. He will be caused to be guarded. That doesn't make sense. And here's an interesting point. We have seven conjugations. Not every verb exists in every one of the seven conjugations. So the verb shamar, to guard, does not exist in the hefil and the hufal, two of the seven conjugations. So I just gave you the explanation, he will cause to be guarded, but that's what it would mean if the word existed, but it doesn't exist. Yashomar or Yushmar is he will cause to be guarded, which makes no sense. And then Heathpel is Yishtamer. He will guard himself or he'll keep something from himself. He'll be extra careful. The seven conjugations. Why do I tell you this? Because Yahweh is a hefeel verb. That is the fifth conjugation. Hefeel. It's the causative conjugation. Remember, Shamar is to guard. Yishmor is he will guard. Yashmir is he will cause to be guarded, which means maybe he'll give the order or he'll send somebody else to guard. That's he will cause to be guarded. So Yahweh or Yahweh is a hefeel verb that literally as a verb would be he who causes to be. And this made a lot of sense to Gesenius and the other scholars of that period. They said, look, the God of Israel is a creator God, so his name should mean he who causes to be. Except we're actually told in Hebrew what his name means. We're told in Exodus 3:14, he says, Eheye Asher Eheye, which is a simple Hebrew verb, and it's actually the first conjugation, which is called kal, which means simple. It's a simple conjugation, and Eheye means I will be in the kal. So whatever his name means, it comes from the kal conjugation. Now, let me explain something. This is, again, there's another second grammatical issue here, is the four prefixes. I'll try to do this quickly for those who don't know grammar. And we call those otiot etan, or the Ethan letters. Etan is aleph, yud, tav, nun. The four letters aleph, yud, tav, nun. And those are the four prefixes. So let's take again the word shamar in the kal conjugation. And I say, I will guard is eshmor. Now, if I change, and that's an aleph at the beginning of eshmor. If I change the aleph with a yud, it becomes he will guard, yishmor. She will guard is tishmor. We will guard is nishmor. And together, aleph, yud, tav, nun is etan, or Ethan, the Ethan letters. What does this mean? When God says, Ehiye Asher Ehiye, he's saying, I will be. And then he says in the next verse, Exodus 3:15, he says to Moses, you know, this is my name forever. And he says, Yud He Vav He. Now, this is a basic Hebrew knowledge. This is really kindergarten information that when you take out the aleph of a future tense verb and you put in the yud, it changes from I will to he will. So there's no question when Yud He Vav He has that yud at the beginning. It's he will, hey vav hey, and hey vav hey is to be. He will to be. Here's where things get a little complicated. And where they get complicated is the word ehye is, if I was saying a regular sentence, I will be tall, I will say ehye gavoah. Ehye is a normal word. Yud hey vav hey is not a normal word. And what do I mean by that? He will be in biblical Hebrew is yihyeh. Yud hey, not yud hey vav hey. So Jewish sources have said this going back many, many years. There's really no dispute in Jewish sources that Yud Heh Vav Heh isn't just Yihyeh, he will be. Because it's not Yud Heh Yud Heh, it's Yud Heh Vav Heh. And Jewish sources unanimously agree, as far as I've been able to find, that Yud Heh Vav Heh is actually a combination of three Hebrew verbs. And those three Hebrew verbs are Haya, he was, Hoveh, he is, and Yihyeh, he will be. And when you put Hayah, Hoveh, Yihyeh together, you get Yehovah. And it's really straightforward. Now, how do I know that that's correct? So Yehovah is the same conjugation as Ehyeh in Exodus 3:14. If you take Yahweh, then you're doing a completely different form of the verb. If you stick with Exodus 3:14, I will be it, I will be, it can't be Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh. It's got to be something like Yehovah. But Hayahoveh, yeah, that is the essence of the creator of the universe. It's what his name means. It's a really important point. And he was, he is, he will be, or you could translate that he is to come. You know, think about the phrase, and it came to pass, which in Hebrew is literally, and it was. To come is to come to pass, to be in Hebrew. So he was, he is, and he will be is in Jewish sources, and they agree on this, and it's not Yahweh in a single Jewish source, in a single Hebrew source anywhere. You can't show me a traditional Jewish source, maybe show me a modern Jewish source, which is repeating what Gesenius said. But that modern Jewish source may not be aware that Gesenius was actually influenced by Jupiter. And he was saying Jupiter is Yahweh. And I just can't accept that the creator of the universe, the God of Israel, is the Latin God. Wow. This is big. This means there's thousands of people who are calling on Yahweh and they don't realize that it is the name Jupiter. It's been tweaked to fit into the Hebrew language, but it's Jupiter. And that's interesting that he makes that statement, Gesenius. He says it's been adapted to Hebrew just like Moshe, but actually he's the one who adapted it to Hebrew. Meaning literally what Gesenius did is he took the Latin Yahweh and he said, well, it's not Yahweh in Hebrew. Let's make it Hebrew. It would be Yahweh, which means he causes to be or he destroys the destroyer. No, the God of Israel is not the destroyer. He is the creator of the universe. He is the source of life. He is the one who is. And it's interesting. Yahweh is about creation. It's about he causes to be. You know, it's this theological idea that God is all about creation. And God is about creation. It's Genesis 1. But his name doesn't mean he who creates. It means he who is. His name isn't about creation. It's about him. He's the center of the subject of his name, not creation. Wow. This is big. This is really big. And I'm just shocked by this. I'm shocked that everything falls into place. And it's really scary. It's right there in the sources. I really didn't discover a single thing that's new. Everything I'm telling you is right there. It's in Gesenius, which, like I said, is not some obscure book. It's the central source of all modern grammars and dictionaries of biblical Hebrew. You just have to trace it back to the source. It's been updated many times, but that's the source of the updates. And it's right there in Josephus. And this is really scary. I'm scared. I'll be honest with you. This is a frightening thing that what this ecumenical spirit of Samaritanism, where we've got all these different gods and we don't want to fight between Ashima and Nergal. So we're all going to use this common thing and let it be Jupiter. Let it be Yahweh, because that's close enough. And the Greeks won't hurt us if we do that. Oh, Yehovah, what's happened? But I just had to share this. I couldn't put this off. This is huge. I think this is really big. And look, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be very upset, and they're going to say, but Yehovah means, oh, hail destruction. Oh, really? Not in Hebrew, it doesn't. Yehovah means HaYahoveh. Yeah, I have a study on that. It's actually in my book, Shattering the Conspiracy of Silence. I talk about that. There's a study on the internet called something like Yehovah, disastrous misunderstanding of the name or something like that. That's just nonsense. That's just made up stuff. Gesenius, the guy who wrote the lexicon, is telling you that Yahweh comes from Jupiter. It's not me. Don't blame me. Nehemiah is saying we're praying to Jupiter. It's not me saying that. It really isn't. It's Gesenius who wrote this grammar, which happens to be a great grammar, and wrote a lexicon, which happens to be the best lexicon. And this is why it had to be revised so many times, because he did say a bunch of nonsense back then in the 1800s. And apparently he himself later kind of distanced himself from that statement, but he says it. And you can see his thought process. Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh. The Samaritans. Jupiter, Hellenius. Oh boy, this is a mess. It really is a mess. I'm going to end in prayer. Yehovah, Avinu Shebashamayim, Yehovah, our Father in heaven. Yehovah, I pray, Yehovah, that you let me see your truth, that you reveal to me whatever truth that you have. You've said to Moshe ben Amram, to Moses, the son of Amram, you said, Eheyeh asher eheyeh, I will be that which I will be. And Yehovah, you are. When I speak of you, you are the one who is Hayah. The one who was Hayah, the one who is Hoveh, the one who will be, the one who is to come, Yehiyeh. And together, Hayah Hoveh Yehiyeh is your name, Yehovah, your eternal name. You are throughout all time. You always existed. You exist right now. You're here with us. And you always will exist. You are the first and the last. You are Hayah Hoveh Yehiyeh. You're not just the God who used to be and now we're done with you. You're not just the God who's going to come in the future and save us. You're not just the God who helps us right now, but, you know, later on, we don't really care. And there was a time when you weren't around. No, you are HaYahoveh. You always have been since before the creation of the universe, before the beginning of time. You are now the one who sustains us every second of the day. And you are the one who will bring us back into our land, who will gather in the exiles, defeat our enemies, so that we beat our swords into plowshares and we have peace throughout the world under the reign of your King Messiah, your anointed one. Yehovah, may this be soon. And Yehovah, I ask for you to have mercy. There's a verse, Yehovah, in your scriptures and Psalms that talks about us going into exile and calling upon the name of a foreign god because we don't know any better. And Yehovah, I ask you to have mercy on those who are calling upon the name of the Latin deity, Jupiter, not realizing that Yahweh is the name of this pagan god. They don't mean it. I know you can see into their hearts and you can see into their minds, and you know that when they call upon this, that they really mean you. And Yehovah, please accept their prayers and turn their hearts to your true name, the name that even the pagan Greeks knew had power. But it's not power to manipulate you, Yehovah. It's the power when we pray in your name and you'll answer us. Yehovah, I pray for healing. Yehovah, I ask you, I sincerely need your protection. I need you to be Yehovah, HaYahovehiyeh, because I can't do it without you. If you're only the one who was 3,500 years ago, then I'm done. I'm toast. I need you, Yehovah, to be Hoveh. I need you to be Yehiyeh. And I love you for being Hayah, the one who was, who did all those things for us. Yehovah, please be with me. As you have said so many times to the prophets, Ehiyeh Imach, I will be with you, Yehovah. I ask you to be with me in these journeys. And as the wandering Jew, return back home to the land of Israel, to the land you gave my forefathers. May this be your will, Yehovah. Amen.
You have been listening to Nehemiah Gordon's Raw Stream of Torah Consciousness. Thank you for supporting Nehemiah's Makor Hebrew Foundation. Learn more at nehemiahswall.com.